Greetings, this is James Gilman with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got a great show tonight. I hope you're all handling these full moon energies because it is a whopper. It feels like the earth is like this big balloon right now with so much energy in it, and I hope nobody sticks the needle in it, but let's go, one of those earthquakes. But anyway, flow with this energy, go within, and what better guest to have to talk about some of these energies and flowing with these energies. I've got Sifu Christopher Matsuo, and he teaches internal martial arts at the Research Institute. He's the director of Bhagaswan, Grandmaster of Dragon Gate Sanctuary. You know, he has such a long bio here. I talked to him earlier. We're going to shorten it. You know, he does acupuncture, Tibetan medicine, so many different things he's involved in, and we'll just bring those out through the interview. He's coming to us from Hawaii, and without any further ado, let's welcome Chris on the show. Chris, are you with us?
Yes, thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show. You know, there's so many things we can cover, and I did get a list from people that with quite a few questions in here, if you don't mind, but I want to go ahead and start at the beginning and, you know, talk a little bit about your background with the, you know, the arts that you teach, and at what age did you start with these disciplines?
Oh, I started, interesting story. I started when, with my grandfather. He used to wake me up early in the morning, and, he'd actually put me on his hand. So I'd stand on his hand, and then he'd make me walk down his arm, past his shoulder and to the other arm, and then to the other hand. And then he'd take me out to the garden. And you know what bougainvilleas are, those beautiful flowers?
Yes.
He'd, he'd take me out to the garden, and we'd watch butterflies. And he'd just wait until we get into this nice zone. And he'd go up, and he'd pick the butterfly right off the flower. And then he'd take me up to the butterflies and let me pick them off there. And then I could do it by myself. It's only about two or three. That was a good start.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's amazing to be, you know, to have that kind of training that young. Is there any more? I'm sure there's a lot more to that story. Can you talk about some of the other disciplines that you entertained after that?
Oh, yeah. You know, I know there was a big ninja boom in the maybe in the 70s and 80s, and actually after the boom was over, I ran into the ninjutsu master in Honomu, Hawaii, on the Big Island, and I was studying with him, so I got a really deep, beautiful foundation from him, and he actually prepared me for everything else, you know. I got him in his prime at a good time, and... That was one of the best trainings I had. Also, training with Mitsuoka Sensei from Japan. He moved over to the Big Island when I was really lucky. And I got to train with him there.
Yeah, it does seem like these things are almost preordained. You know, it's, you know that old saying, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. But I've seen that same thing with myself. I've noticed that all these teachers, whenever I would get an inner prompting, you know, I need to go study this or learn this or whatever, all of a sudden the teacher would just like appear or whatever. And you know, often right in our own backyard.
It is like that. Yeah, it ruined so many plans for trips for me. Every time I wanted to go to China or Japan or Tibet, they would just show up and ruin my travel plans.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that, because that's the same thing that happened to me. I was planning on going to India and Tibet, and the llamas and the yogis would just show up, you know, and I wouldn't have to go.
Now
anywhere.
when we go, we can go to the flea market.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, probably meet the Grand Master there selling something. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your school? You know, tell us about the Dragon Gate School and maybe when it was founded and what's your vision for the school?
It was founded in 1993. I wanted to show people I wanted to show people a metaphor or a reflection of their life. Like, they do a lot of things in their life, and they master a lot in their life, but they just don't know that. And they also have a lot of gifts, a lot of psychic abilities, but they just don't use it correctly. They use it to fight with their family. So actually, I show them where the gift is, and I show them, you know, where everything matches. It's like drawing a bridge for them. Mm-hmm. And that's my goal, actually. It's a small goal, but it's an important goal.
So basically, you know, teaching people how to stay centered and use their energies correctly and maybe focus their energies.
Yeah, show them how they already mastered their energy, or how they already have a gift and they just need to learn how to use it properly. But mm-hmm. their life already, it's already existing in their life somewhere, in their professions, mm-hmm. what they do.
Yeah. There's we have a big question here because we have so many people that are connected into this, you know, the higher dimensional beings and things. And one of the questions they asked is there a connection between the star nations, and your system of knowledge, the, you know, martial arts, Taoism, Buddhism, and shamanism?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, I don't know too much vocabulary. But the Taoist sect that I'm connected to is a Polestar sect, and it's the same for the Tibetan root. You know that swastika symbol that Hitler used, and it's a Buddhist symbol, also a Mongolian symbol. That's the Polestar swimming around the. That's the Big Dipper swimming around the Polestar.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's a Polestar sect, and so, you know, I'm not sure so much about the star systems, but the Nine Palaces is the seven stars of the Big Dipper, Sirius, and Polaris. And so that's where the origin of my Kung Fu is. It also came from Bonpo shamanism, which, you know, we know that they're a little misunderstood, but they hold postures, walk circle, they open gateways in the sky, and legendarily a ladder will come down from heaven to earth and open. Mm-hmm. And that ladder is the DNA, and you know, the Japanese fondants that exist now,
mm-hmm.
and that's what became my bagua, my Chinese kung fu.
So, yeah, it seems like the especially the Japanese are really plugged into the Pleiades system, you know, and they even have it on the front of the Subarus and things of that nature.
Oh,
so
yeah. You got to show me that later.
Yeah, I thought that's and you know, Mazda, you know, they have the Mazda, and that's basically one of their gods.
Oh,
so it's
is it Mazda like Ahura Mazda, like the Persian Zoroastrian?
Yeah,
that's the root of my bong. That's the root of my bong pole.
Uh-huh.
Oh, maybe it is a nice family tree.
I know some of the Tibetan practices when I was working with them, and some of the Tibetan masters would understand. You know, I would talk to them about Pleiadians and these really tall feline beings that would appear and. You know, and they'd know what I was talking about, and they would smile and they go, you know, yeah, you know, but, and then others were saying, no, ignore that. Don't go there. Just, you know, that's a distraction. And they didn't know anything about it. You know, they had no idea that they even existed.
Oh, that's funny.
I thought that was quite interesting. I went to one, I won't mention names, but one really high lama, very old lama, and talked to him about it. He goes, well, we see lights in the sky, but we don't pay any attention to them. And yeah, and I go, well, if you did, you had to connect with one of them, you know. It's like,
yeah, I guess there's a lot of that going around, too.
Yeah. Well, I had a guy who was very adept at Qigong and Kung Fu, and he was from Korea, and he came here. And what happened was he was, all of his teachings, he said the ancient teachings that he got into, he seemed they all go back to the stars, and that's what he was telling me. And so he said he really wanted to find out what this was about. And we had a guy here doing a talk about the Pleiadians and things, and he came to the talk, and then he tried to leave the ranch, and he couldn't leave. And something just would not let him leave, and he came back, and he started asking me a million questions about, you know, the different beings up there, the star nations. And one of them started coming into me really strong that wanted to connect with him. And so, you know, I connected him with him so he could feel the energy. And you know, he sat there and he cried for about 20 minutes. And he said, this is 10,000 times stronger than anything I've ever experienced. And he got his answer, I guess. But it does seem like when you track these most ancient teachings down, they seem to either go back to Egypt, which goes back to Atlantis and Lemuria, which goes back to the star nations, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's been your experience or not.
A lot of connections to the sky, even if they're not specific what exactly, there's always connections to the sky, and there's always this, manuscripts passed down to speak to the them when they come back down. So I have some manuscripts handed to me that of chants in an old ancient language to speak to the aliens when they come down, and the hands to show them. There's eight or nine hands to show, which is from my the origin of my kung fu.
Nice. Yeah, it's interesting when I noticed let's say yoga, there's a lot of people practicing yoga, and, they can do all the postures and everything else, and then you try to talk to them about anything else, and they just, look at you with this look like, you just go, okay, And one of my I talked to this one yogi. He was like this supposed to be really well known. He's teaching yoga classes all over the world and supposed to study in India and everything. And you talk to him about the higher connections and Babaji and things like that. And he would just say, well, yeah, Babaji is the master, but we don't care about, nothing to do at all with the star nations or the higher dimensional beings. And I go, it has everything to do with it.
Amazing.
I see how people can get caught into a religion form, I think it's like, it's very important to spend time practicing your arts and things like that. But also stay open to what that's going to generate or what kind of doors that's going to open for you.
That's true. Yeah, I'm sure you know, but there's a difference between the shaman and the priest, and there's also a difference in people, when they're ready or when they're not ready. So when they're not so ready, the priests are there to act between God and the people. They're not to perform rituals, for the fear of where the dead go, what's going to happen. All those, they're there to address that and bring the people together into a body. And that's their main, historical use. And the shaman is different. It was for people who wanted to work on themselves, wanted to develop. They have that urge or that hunger to be better, to develop, to evolve, work on themselves. I think that's why there's so little knowledge or material to work on yourself in the religions. It's mostly just to gather them together and have a support group. But there's not so much knowledge in developing yourself, and that was left more to the shaman, the caste in history.
Yeah, it seems like when you're ready to make your own personal God connection or spirit creator, whatever you want to call it, you go to the shamans, and if you want, like you're saying, if you want somebody else to, take responsibility for that, you go to the priest.
Yeah.
But there's a price to pay.
Yeah, like if you're, our parents or grandparents, they have no idea sometimes, so they need something to feel better, and then we have to go to the church.
Yeah.
organize some kind of ritual for them.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of different, teachers of a lot of different, faiths and disciplines and things, and it seems a lot of them talk about this point that you get to in your spiritual evolution where you make a choice, and you either choose service to others or you move into self-service, you're given these powers, and you either use that power, the ultimate power is love and love serves, or you get these other powers for overpowering people and manipulating people. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that, because it seems like people hit that point and they need to know that, if you need to be very clear about the choice you make when you hit that threshold.
That's right. Yeah. I know a lot about that, actually. I'm not sure where to start, but I could talk the rest of the week on that. I think what's important is that, I think the teachers that are there now that have the knowledge, the talent, the skill, but they do have the abusive, there's some abusive streaks in there. I think they become double teachers because they show us something. We could become them, but then when we see what they're doing and what they could have, and what things could be done, we make our choices, and that makes us learn from them in one way and then learn from them in another way, and we realize what we don't want to be and what we do want to be, and that's more inspiring than just following a teacher and trying to do what he trying to do is follow as much as he teaches.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really great inspiration. Maybe the first couple of years I didn't, but now I do.
Yeah, I know. I think sometimes I really thank people in my life for showing me where not to go or what not to do. I've had friends in my life that used a lot of drugs, and I watched where that took them. And I had friends that had a lot of anger, and energy, and they just wanted to be the ultimate warrior. And, I saw where that took them,
Right. Yeah. The Tibetan tradition that, there's Tibetan Buddhism, which, is really popular. Always talking about seven yogas of Naropa and attainments and those supernatural skills. And, but they also talk about attachment. And that's what they are, is their false attainments. And if you attach to those, you that's where you stay. That's where you stop. And nobody talks about that. I'm not sure why, but it is an important thing. Like when they're getting these messages, their talents, their psychic abilities, and they start to have this power that they could abuse, they could use, they could really take control over people. That's the time to be educated in, these are maybe false attainments and maybe not even so accurate, maybe 30% accurate, but enough to, grab people and entice them, and, the power and the cities or the abilities,
there's a lot of different names for them.
But that's usually a good bait. It's a good type of bait, and it's a mind trap.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen some teachers, and not to, I don't know, I'm sound like judgment, but I'm not. I'm only bringing this out just to help people with some pitfalls and get your wisdom on it. But I've also seen some teachers where actually beings jump into them. And they allow these beings to work through them, and some of these beings aren't so friendly, and there seems to be a major price to pay. So what would be the best way to avoid that? Avoid going off in the wrong direction with that, or getting caught up in powers and abilities, and losing your heart, your love connection.
Yeah, that's actually what I like about you. I actually got to see a little bit of, what you do and what you say and the messages you give out, and it is about the heart. You know, people are having this longing, and they also want to be special, and maybe, you know, attaching to a spirit or, you know, channeling something, whether it's good or bad, it still makes them special. Whether it's they're getting beat up by it or not, it still makes them special. And that kind of attachment, you know, it's a little abusive, but we see a lot of abusive relationships around. And a spiritual one is no different. But, yeah, the connection to the heart, to really have a good relationship with your heart, to build your identity around that, and to learn how to let it resonate with that. You know, guides only know as much as your parents and your teachers and any other teacher would know. But it still has to resonate with your heart. And
exactly. I always tell people that you know, these beings, if what you're experiencing with these incredible beings, it has to be within you or you couldn't experience it. So rather than put it outside of yourself, you know, it's time to own it within yourself. And they're just here to remind us, you know, of that same God within us that they're expressing. There's no difference between us and these higher beings.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about your messages, is it was very central and it was very important. And yeah, I got a really nice sigh of relief inside.
Yeah, that's not why. Well,
that is the message people need, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched some of your talks and things like that with sons here at the ranch, and he was asking me, he said, so what do you think? And I said, all I had to do was look at him and hear him say about three sentences. I already knew him. You know, I said, I already knew his heart and what he was all about, you know. I said, that's the thing. It's an energetic signature that you pick up on.
Yeah.
You know, that you can feel, you know, when somebody's really coming from a high space, you know, or a very loving space, you might say.
Yeah.
But you know, I'd love to hear about some of your just daily personal practices and what you do just on a day-by-day schedule, you might say.
On a day-to-day schedule, I treat a lot of patients, cancer patients. I do a lot of private lessons. I work the entire day. I work all the way through the night. But I'm meditating the entire time, so I'm enjoying it. It's 24-hour meditation for me. So I'm sitting, standing, teaching in a nice, beautiful state all day. And then I go move around all night and do my Qigong and Kung Fu. And I have a personal practice, which is to be asleep and awake at the same time, and also to be in meditation for 24 hours a day. That way, even if I fail for 16 hours, I'm still successful for 8 hours. It's better than putting it off, penciling it in.
That's a good one. Yeah, someone's telling me you only sleep,
yeah,
what, 2 hours?
I could fail 23 hours and still be successful for one.
Yeah.
There's no fail.
Yeah. There's an old saying, you know, I never made a mistake. I manifested a lot of things and gained a lot of wisdom.
That's a nice way to see it.
Yeah. Like now I know what I don't want, you know. I guess you wouldn't know what you want, or you have to experience the other stuff to know it, you know, or you'd never know it. So it's just evolution.
Yeah.
So what do you sleep, maybe what, 2 hours? 2 hours a day or something? Or
I sleep 2 hours a day. I sleep from 6:30 to 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
The body has to rest a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you're sleeping, yeah, 24 hours a day, you know, you might have to catch up a really nice deep sleep for 2 hours. But you're also awake the rest of the whole day too. So it's a really nice way to bring out the best in everybody and to really prioritize your energy and your life and, you know, really see what's not worth doing and what is worth doing. It's a really amazing practice for me. It inspires me, you know, every day with wisdom, and, you know, I get little gems out of it all the time because I can't afford to I can't afford to do something I don't want to do, which is amazing for me.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that when you reach a certain level of evolution, not that there are levels, everything's one, but it seems like basically the only thing that does bring you joy is helping others and serving. Everything else is just kind of day by day.
Yeah, that is the most important. I think that's the most rewarding, and I think it's the most, you get the deepest connections. You bring the best out in everybody, and it's a good example for others to follow. I think that's the best. You know, that's always the best job is service.
Yeah. Have you ever walked away from your work and just saying, you know what, screw this, I quit. I'm just going to get a day job somewhere or something like that?
Yeah, you know, there's some times where, you know, someone just going through their ups and downs and you feel a little betrayed, but there's so much other, the rest of the people just outweigh them so much. I could never make that decision. I have a really lucky life. My family's great. Every patient I have is great. They all treat me so nice. One patient going through a little drop in energy here and there is really not so bad. It does feel a little betrayed sometimes, but I'm supposed to understand what betrayal is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few times in my life where I've just said, you know what, I'm done. I'm forget this path, you know, and you get beat up by the dark forces and friends and family and things like that. And you just go on, you know what, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to move to another country and do nothing, even if it's wrong, you know. And that usually lasts about maybe 2 or 3 days, you know, and then the spirit kicks your butt, you know, hits you right back on the path again.
That's true. Yeah. You know, my ninjutsu teacher, he taught me about, just feeling betrayed in general. He said, you feel betrayed because you have, you can see the potential in people. And when you see their potential, you think that, you know, you raise your standards of them. You raise your expectations of them. And that's what betrays you. What I figured out is if I have, if I lower my expectations of everybody, they either meet or exceed it. I'm happy 24 hours a day. It's not a low expectation. It's just a realistic one.
Yeah, that's a great, that's a great one because, you know, what I see with a lot of people is people will fall in love with somebody else's potential they don't realize that maybe that person hasn't reached that potential yet, and they're acting out a lot of other lower potentials, you know.
I know,
the way.
Famous last words.
Yeah. And so they go through that honeymoon phase, you know, chair gets kicked out from under them.
I think that causes a lot of heartbreak, you know, with or without a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's so much easier just to be happy for no reason, you know, no expectations, you know, and let people do whatever they need to do.
Yeah.
You know, their process. The, speaking of processes, I know right now, and I'm sure you're being inundated with this, but these energies coming in, there does definitely, you know, seem to be a vibrational lifting or an awakening healing process where the whole earth is undergoing right now. Do you have any, ideas or methods or people can deal with, you know, assimilating these new energies?
With when? Well, with the new energies.
Yeah, assimilating them so they don't just like, you know, fall apart through them or.
It still has to do with the heart, you know, to be centered in the heart. But, a lot of us are empathic. And so, you know, what we think we should be feeling, how we should be feeling these energies are opposite of what we should be doing. You know, when the master says, sit and watch the candle flame, we would sit and watch the candle flame, and I'm sure some of us would see past lives and faces and mountains and, you know, travels and all those things. But you know, being empaths, just becoming that flame is one of the most important things, you know. To hold 90% and radiate the light and warmth that comes off of it is almost uncharacteristic of an empath, but that's what they need to do to be strong. So they need to hold the 90% to be a strong person, to have a strong identity, to radiate from their center, you know, all these energies and hold it, you know, where they are integrated in the universe and they are strong, and it does radiate with a lot of strength, and it's recognized by the people around them, and it ignites the people around them. I think that's one of the most important, and that's what I teach the most is, you know, I teach empaths how to get their shen together.
Yeah, get there. Yeah, shift happens, you know.
Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, I know so many people right now that are empaths and they're feeling everything. I mean, they're feeling, you know, these events in Japan, they're feeling the whole process of the entire planet and friends and family and everything else, and you know, they're just losing it, kind of going bonkers with this stuff. And you know, that is excellent advice, you know, to maybe get a candle and start doing some focus work on becoming the flame.
Yeah, that's their skill is to, they could become anything and anybody and any energy. They could become the flame if they stop projecting on it and just relax.
Yeah.
They could really feel the strength.
Yeah, they need to stop focusing on the shift, all the shift coming at them.
Yeah, it's that urge inside. You know, their urge is to go 100% outward, and the urge is to, you know, do everything for everybody, and the urge is to give 110%, and it should be to hold it and to embody it and to, you know, be a good example, be strong.
Now, the old Bodhisattva program, it seems like, was to, you know, to take on all the pain and suffering of the world and try to transmute it and things like that. But that doesn't seem to be the path right now, especially considering what the world's going through.
That's right. Yeah. That's, you know, that's a good example. The Bodhisattvas were the ones that hold the door open for everybody and wait till everybody gets through the door before they close the door. And the Buddhas were the one working on themselves, you know. You can help a lot more people when you're a Buddha than if you're a Bodhisattva, you know. It's a higher electricity bill, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to pay your dues on that one.
Yeah.
We've had that in classes here when we're doing self-mastery classes. We've had, like beings appear, and I don't even know who they are, and they tell me, and then I find out, yeah, they're one like Amitabha and things like that, and these cosmic Buddhas come in and appear, it's kind of interesting, you know. But it's just everybody goes, don't you freak out when that happens? And I go no, it's just interesting, you know. I have fun with it, you know. I feel their energy, it's awesome, you know. I love them, you know, but I don't go running around screaming their names and putting little necklaces on their pictures, you know.
I think the time for that's over.
I thought about this idea as I was going to get these necklaces, you know, with where you put the face in the middle of the necklace for everybody to wear, and I was going to put my face in the necklace and then pass it out to all the people that come. And the people that don't wear the necklace, those are going to be the students. Those are the ones I'm going to teach. Everybody that puts the necklace on, I'm going to kick them out.
Hey, that's a good way.
The ones that go, I'm not wearing this. I go, okay, you're in.
Yeah, you know. That's an amazing way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, the other day I was giving a talk in Palm Springs, and I asked like two or three questions, and I raised my hand, and then I said, okay, how many people believe they're separate from omnipresence? And I raised my hand, and some bunch of people in the audience raised their hand, and I go, got you. You know, it's like, you know, stop following, you know, get, you know. You know, it was pretty funny. But most of it, I was amazed, though. There wasn't a whole lot, but some of them just raised their hand, and I said, You know, you're giving your power away. You need to stop. You need to keep that rational mind going and discernment. You know, don't give it away to anybody. But
yeah, that's true. You know, I see a lot less people like that from, you know, from maybe in the early 90s and before, where, you know, you see a lot of that, but it's a lot less now. People are a lot smarter. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, you know, I was impressed too, because used to pull that stunt, almost everybody would raise their hand. They'd see you raise your hand, and they didn't want to be left out of the group, you know, and they go, oh, this guy is brilliant. I better raise my hand, you know. But I was amazed that a lot of the vast majority of people did not raise their hand. This gave me that look, like, you know, like, yeah, right. You know, so I go, all right, you got a good crowd here.
Yeah, isn't that impressive? I haven't seen that for years.
No, I'd love to get your take on, you know, your interpretation of the current world events, you know, and kind of what's going on, or what you see unfolding, you know, as we move into, you know, the next maybe 2 or 3 years or so.
Yeah, I see. It's a really nice opportunity, you know, for you know, just reflection on what you're doing, what you're putting aside, you know, what you're putting off, what you need to do, and what your priorities are. And it's, you know, sort of our turn. You know, I know that people focused on right now what's in the news, but there's a lot that's not in the news, that's on every day, and it's very similar news. It's just that it's us now. You know, it has to do with us. And this, you know, these crises have been going on. It's every day, right? And it's everywhere. It's just that these made the news because these are threatening us. And but, you know, it's our turn to be aware too, and to set our priorities, and to be ready, and to prepare ourselves, and to work on ourselves, and to you know, to set our families and our groups, our core groups, strong. It is the process still, you know. Maybe it's not like in a big enlightenment, but it's still about the process and not about the end point. You know, I really feel that, you know, this is it's a really valuable thing to experience and to see, and to, you know, to understand, to think about. It's a big brainstorm, and, you know, sometimes it takes a crisis for that, but, you know, it's time, and that's what we need to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a time for self, you know, self-reflecting and being accountable and being responsible for, you know, what you're participating in, and what you're feeding, and what you're involving yourself in. And I'm seeing the whole world right now is getting a huge huge reflection coming back to them right now on what they're involved with, and whether or not they should continue in that process.
Yeah. It really comes back fast. It's good to get feedback.
Yeah. Seems like the feedback is coming back almost, it's like instant now, you know, we're getting instant feedback.
Yeah, it is. I guess it's important to be that fast right now, but I can, you know, I notice a lot of people are doing, you know, just what they're supposed to be doing, and they weren't doing it a few weeks ago, and maybe it seems a little late, but better late than never. It's a very huge catalyst.
Oh yeah,
you know, everybody's all ears.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people in you know, leadership positions that were in the mainstream, and, you know, just following the status quo and doing whatever they were told to do, are seem to be breaking ranks now, and a lot of them are just stepping forward and saying this is wrong, this is not right, and spilling the beans on a lot of stuff right now. And I mean, it's everywhere. And in a way, when I watch that, I don't watch it with attachment. In a way, I'm kind of watching it going, all right, I can see the shift happening. and I can see the flow, where the flow is going, but at the same time, try not to get, you know, emotionally involved in it, or try to depersonalize the situation.
Yeah, that's true. You know, when I see all the tragedy, it's just amazing tragedy. You know, I know in the, just in the, with the tsunami, we almost forgot about the tsunami, but there were old people and babies in those cars, and you know, there's a lot. And, but I also know that, you know, that was happening every day, every hour somewhere else. And then I wasn't, you know, and I almost felt bad to just feel bad about that when, you know, if I was more aware, I would have been crying 24 hours a day for the rest of my life. And, I think, you know, rather than do that, you know, being strong pillars and helping and, you know, educating and, you know, helping people develop and get strong is more important.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just out of curiosity. Have you ever met Khan?
No, I haven't met Khan. No, I haven't met him yet. That's right. I actually looking forward to it. I've never had the opportunity.
Yeah, he's just a big mountain of joy, you know, just a wonderful spirit. And he's over there now. What's really awesome is that his village, his whole village was completely wiped out by the tsunami, and his family, he thought, and everything. And he just found, I think it was just yesterday, I'm pretty sure, he found his mother and father, and he thought they were just totally, you know, erased from the face of the earth, like the rest of the village. But, and I don't know if he has other family over there as well. I haven't been able to communicate with him, but we just got news that he did find his parents, and they were okay, which was amazing considering what happened. I don't know the whole story, but it's like a miracle that they survived, you know, that whole situation.
Amazing. Yeah.
You know, he must come
from a powerful family.
I think the gods were smiling on him and his family that day, they probably knew he didn't need to carry that, you know, in his work. But he's working, helping other people reunite and connect now. And in that process, he ended up finding his own family, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to meeting him. He's strong, and he's all heart, and he's strong all the way through. It's amazing.
Yeah, he is. You know, it's funny. I had him, I was trying to get my back adjusted. It was stuck, you know, and so I talked to, I said, hey, can you, I showed him what I wanted to do, and he just picked me up and shook me like a rag doll. and it popped back
in. Oh, yeah, I got one of those over here.
yeah. And I go, thank you. That's exactly what I needed, you know. It's like, it's pretty funny. We've had a lot of fun up here. We took, you know, he's got those. I don't know if you've seen the photos. Have you seen the photos that he took here?
I did. With the light, the manifested light and the dragon body photos. I did.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, with Kuan Yin and Mary, these felines, these 12-foot tall felines. He got photographs of them. Have you ever come across the felines, or is that something you can talk about?
You know, I come across the strangest things. I try not to make a big deal out of it, and sometimes I don't even tell anybody I see them, but I see a lot of strange stuff. I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of stuff between here and there, and you know, I already was trying to, you know, believe that there's no space between any two people, but there sure is a lot of stuff in that space.
Definitely. I was just wondering, because I know I've seen they've been working with people basically throughout their lives, and some know about it, some don't know about it, and I've actually run into some scientists that have actually met these beings straight up and have been given technology that, you know, is, you know, Earth-friendly technology, some pretty amazing things. And, you know, I've noticed that, you know, I wasn't really like I'm sure like you, I wasn't looking for these things, but they do seem to pop up, you know, in the process. I was just curious if you've had any interactions with them. You know, I've seen two different. One has really? Like a lion head, and the other one has a cat head.
I see lion here. Not much. I see a lot of snake here and weird goldfish looking things and uh-huh. those the ones that look like Godzilla.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are those like the, oh God, what's that, the moho?
Maybe. Yeah, they look like baby Godzilla, I guess.
Uh-huh. Yeah, those are interesting.
And the ones with the snakes with the human upper body. I think it's just the lineages or the connections of the local mm-hmm. people here is what I see. You know, just,
yeah.
that's what's more prevalent.
Now, I know that in Hawaii, I guess Pele has her pet kind of dragon, the moho.
Oh yeah,
you know,
the moho. Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that guy running around.
Yeah, it's funny. There's the mythical moho, which travel through underground tunnels under the islands, and mm-hmm. Like lava tubes, you know. And then there's actually indigenous moho, which is like they look like iguanas. They're 3 to 4 feet, and they're up in the mountains.
It's interesting. Yeah, I've heard different stories, and I was trying. You know, I think you answered that question because somebody else was saying they see them up in the mountains all the time, and I guess that's the one they're talking about is the iguana.
Yeah, I don't know if you know they shift from one shape to another, but. Yeah, there's two forms. There's definitely two forms. I actually took Pele home. I picked her up on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I bet that was interesting.
Yeah. I tried to keep a sense of humor. I don't know if you want to hear the story.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. It was 2:30 in the morning. It was pitch black. The highway that I was on, there's no streetlights. It was raining really hard, and I drive past this woman in a red sarong, barefoot, walking in the rain in the dark. And I knew, oh no, I have to go pick her up. So I circle around, and I come back around, and I pull over next to her, and I say, excuse me, do you want to get in the car? I'll give you a ride. And she turns around, glares at me, and screams, no, and just shook my whole body. Every hair in my body stood up. And so I said, okay, and I went, and then I said, no, I got to go pick her up. I have to take her home. So I circle around again, and I say, you know, I really think you should get in the car, and I'll take you home. You just point and show me where. And so I get her in the car, I turn the heater up for her, and she looks at me and says, you're a very nice man. And then I'm thinking, please don't disappear. Please don't disappear. And it was really a Hawaiian girl in a red sarong, and she was only wearing the sarong, and she was completely barefoot, and she pointed out where she wanted to get dropped off, and I dropped her off way out somewhere on the side of the road, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? And I grabbed a pet tree frog in an aquarium, and I handed it to her, put it in her hands, and I said, here, have my tree frog. And I drove away looking in the rearview mirror at her. Wondering if she got my joke.
Yeah. Did she vanish on you?
No, I'm glad she didn't. But wow, she's had that was some strong energy. Kelly usually comes in the form of a beautiful Hawaiian woman in a red sarong, uh-huh. or in the form of an old lady with silver hair and a dog. And mm-hmm. in tradition, we're supposed to give her gin or cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah. I had some experiences when I was over there with her as well. It was pretty fascinating. You know, the dog one too was interesting because there was this moho, I guess you should say, that was at a place I was staying, and it kept coming out. And we were putting food out for it, and I was trying to get a picture of it. And I kept, and it would trigger the lights and it would take the food. And I'd grab my camera and I'd run out there and the thing would be gone. And all I'd see is these orbs, you know, big balls of red light, you know, in the photograph.
Yeah.
and it kept disappearing. And so I go, I'm going to get a picture of this thing. And so the third time I went out there to grab a picture of this thing, I see this dog, and it's kind of a real light colored dog, and it's running away from me when I was going to take the picture, but its feet weren't moving. It was running away, but its legs looked like a cutout, you know. It looked like it was cut out of cardboard, and its tail went up and then straight back, like it was broke almost, like a weird angle. And I was talking to Nahi. I don't know if you've met Nahi over there. She's one of the kahunas over in Maui about that. Wow. And she goes, "Oh no, that was the moho." She said it actually can shape shift, and it always often shape shifts into a dog. And runs alongside of Pele. And she said, but it never gets it right. When it shape shifts, it never quite gets it right.
That's why the legs weren't moving.
yeah, that's why the tail was bent back like that, and the legs weren't moving, you know, as it was going away. And I didn't even take a picture of it. I go, it's just a dog. And I go, wait a second, its legs aren't. It's forgetting to move its legs while it's running. You know, so it was pretty bizarre, but that was one of my little experiences with
the moho. I got a really I got a scarier story about Pele. I was teaching some of Pele's teachings, you know, from the Kahuna, and I made a generalization, like, you know, there's a lot of similarities in the lineages, so I made a generalization about the lineage, and then I got a little flash of Pele in my head. And I thought, you know, did I do something wrong? So later on in the night, I'm sitting down, relaxing, and my body just jumps up and arcs off the ground. And this giant pig comes just charging through my chest. And I'm thinking, wow, what is this? And it's screaming, and it has eyes like a spider. You know, so it's this huge pig with so many eyes on either side. And it's screaming and screaming. And so I didn't know, you know, I had no idea what that was at the time. I call up, I call my friend and I say, hey, can you have your friend, you know, the last person I interacted with, I figured it was him. I said, can you have your friend, you know, pull his pig back? He sent it after me. And she said, oh, I don't think it's him, but I'll go call him. And so I get a message back that says, you know, the Kamapua'a, you know, is rarely sent after somebody, but the only person that would send him is Pele, and you must have had done something really disrespectful. So I had to go. Yeah. I had to go email Pele really quick and pay my respects, say hello, and renew my respect to Pele. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite interesting. I know they. She seems to be. I know a lot of other masters or teachers or what or beings like that are pretty forgiving, but she seems to be like, you know, you get it right with her, she'll burn you, you know.
Yeah, hot-headed, hot-blooded. No offense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, she's it's that fire energy, you know. It's going to bust you right through, or it's going to burn up the nonsense. You know, you're either going to live through it or learn, you may not. Who knows?
Pretty direct, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to cover one more. We're almost out of time, unfortunately, but I know you've had some, you know, experiences with the Minnehunis and the Night Marchers and some of the other things over there.
Yeah, I see a lot of Minnehunis. There's places on the island, you know, these Minnehunis are small and they're see-through, like those dragons, you know, like people don't normally see them, but I think anyone could see them as long as they sit and just watch nature for a little while, and then you start seeing them run back and forth, and especially on, you know, on a certain part of the, on this island that I live. And, I have a lot of stories about Minnehunis. Some have driven some people crazy. They're practical jokers. They move things around. I've moved things around with them.
Yeah.
The Night Marchers are these huge hulking shadows. And I guess the most interesting story is that I went out to Haunaumea Bay. I know when people go to Hawaii, they go see Haunaumea Bay. And I went to go bless a recreational center out there. I took two people with me, and they just wanted to, you know, experience something and help me and maybe watch my back a little bit. So I took them to the back, and I said, "Hey, where do you think the Night Marcher trail is?" So they're scanning the air, and they say, "Oh, I think it's coming from whatever up that way." And I said, "Okay, let's play a game. Close your eyes. Where's the Night Marchers?" And then they're pointing outward, and I said, "Guess again." And they go, "Oh, no." And they were right there. And we were wondering what to do. And I said, "Hey, you know, my pug was chi-boxing. So let's try and play a game with the Night Marchers. We'll challenge them. We'll put a vortex out over here. And then if I win, I put them in the vortex. If I lose, we leave. We don't come back." So I said, "Sit down and watch my back. And you guys kind of hold the space for me." And wow, that was an experience. You know, I'm so glad I was stupid, but I wasn't. I was skilled.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And yeah, that was a nice experience doing bagua with chicken skin.
Yeah.
But we put the Night Marchers in the vortex, and we got the place blessed, but. Those guys are so huge, you know. There's such a connection with the land. There's such a connection with the land and the Hawaiian people. You know, when they die, their belief in the land is so strong. Sometimes they get wedded to it.
Now, is there? I don't know if you're. What's the if people want to get a hold of you or what's the best way? Or are you pretty? You're probably pretty full with all your classes and your other.
Well, I know classes. My classes are closed to the public, and that's why I do some. You know, sometimes I do things to balance it out. Like, you know, I think some of the information should get out there, and you know, it's a big responsibility to train with me and try to, you know, follow a tradition like that. But I also could share that with the rest of the world, and you know, so they can see what I see, but they see it in their own practices, and so.
Yeah.
The Dragon Gate Sanctuary, you know, DragonGateSanctuary@gmail.com. That goes to my staff, and then they forward me some letters, and they take care of you know, figuring out where everything goes.
Okay, great. That's the best way. Well,
really,
unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been a great connection. I'm sure everybody. Had a great time and felt the energy that you're holding over there in Hawaii.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking to you. That was what I was looking forward to the most, was, you know, getting to talk to you. And
you too. Hey, well, we're out of time, unfortunately, so I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on the show. But anyway, we're out of time, folks. I know there's so much more we'd want to get into, but we'll maybe bring him on again some other time. And it's James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening. Good night.